Grace, greetings, and welcome to the DDP for the 30th of December. I'm Paul White. You are listening to the Deeper Daily Podcast Essay Edition for December 2018. Be careful with whom you fall in love, because by then, it's too late. I'm not sure who I heard say that, but I wrote it down some time ago because I felt it rang true. To elaborate, it would seem to me that once you give your heart away, you chase the one who holds it, and they remain the object of your affection through thick and thin. It's too late to simply feel differently. Your heart is stolen, and there's no going back. This is what we hope our children learn, so that they don't follow after someone who will hurt them, use them, and then leave them broken. It takes a long time to let go of love, and we often can't do it until we are shattered, bruised, and full of regret. The silver lining to falling in love is the euphoric sense that we are flying rather than falling. It's too late to go back. We've jumped off the cliff of sanity and into the world of love and affection. If we happen to have picked the right person with whom to fall into love, then we are set for a wonderful adventure, a lifetime of getting to know them and of allowing them to know that most secret version of ourselves. It's an amazing time, and love, a many splendored thing. The most telling form of this love is that which manifests toward our children. We love them instantly, unconditionally, and without forethought. They have our hearts from the moment we first hear their heart beat, and they steal them in new ways over and over again. Once when we first hold them, again when they leave for school, again when they walk down the aisle, and a million times in between. Life with them is a constant experience in the joys of love. But just as every good has its evil and every day its night, love has a dark possibility lurking nearby. The dark side of love is difficult and painful because that same bundle of joy will rebel and argue and fight against our best laid plans. They will often make poor choices regarding friends and lovers, and we will watch them bear unspeakable pain. In regards to unspeakable, there is the darkest possibility of all. Love comes with the chance of loss, and the euphoria of love holds the distinct possibility of betrayal, and worst of all, death. We love so deeply because we know that it is possible to love them and lose them, and to have our hearts break and create a void that nothing else will ever fill. How can it? Nothing and no one else will ever be that person. Even in loving them and losing them, we wouldn't trade that experience for the world, for it is truly better to have loved and lost than to have never loved at all. The Apostle John declares that God is love, and that his love was manifested toward us through Jesus. He goes on to explain the true definition of love, what it is and what it isn't. You may be surprised to find that according to his definition, love is not best defined by how much or how well we love, but by the quality of his love for us. If we can comprehend that love, then we are well equipped, and as John says, we also ought to love one another. How do we wrap our minds around this? John makes it appear that we can't really know what love is until we know how loved that we are. I might believe that if my definition of love was shaped around my love for my wife. Loving her is rather easy and a world of fun, but I can see how my love for her is greatly influenced by her love for me. If she were to hate me and work against me and do all she could to run me off and bring me pain, loving her would be difficult and quite probably, eventually, impossible. In other words, my love for her is aided along by my knowledge of her love for me. She makes loving her easy. But an argument against John's definition would be our earlier illustration of the automatic and unconditional love that we have for our children. I don't need them to love me in order for me to rationalize my love for them. In fact, they can rebel, talk back, actively hurt me, and try to cause me pain, and I love them all the same. Mind you, my kids haven't done much to test this theory, but I understand instinctively the love that I have for them. It need not be returned. It is absolute. It is total. Does my comprehension of the love of the Father for me have an effect on how I love my children? I suppose it could. If I know he cares for me unconditionally, then that may make accepting them easier, but I honestly doubt that. I think I care for them because they are mine, and my love for them grows, not by outside knowledge, but by intimacy and relationship. So I conclude that perhaps I've been misunderstanding what John was trying to say. That seems to be safer ground than John is wrong. Who am I to conclude as much? John's been around a lot longer than I have, and to be fair, he's writing about our understanding of spiritual love, not romantic love or parental love, for that matter. Perhaps John is explaining a greater and deeper truth. Maybe he is showing us that if we want to understand why we love our children the way we do, we should look at the Father's plan and love for us. Only when we see things from his perspective do we appreciate what we are, and ultimately, we appreciate what he is. Let's take that journey for a moment. In the story of the creation, God forms one man and one woman and joins them together in union. Technically, he does nothing in regards to a wedding or a ceremony, and to be truly technical, he brings them together in spirit by pulling the man apart in flesh. Eve is taken out of Adam, and when Adam sees her, he sees a piece of himself and is instantly drawn to her as protector and provider. These characteristics in a man are not evidence of toxic masculinity, as some would like us to believe, but of deep biological and spiritual reactions to having seen ourselves in another's eyes. God instructs them to multiply themselves on the earth by having children. This is an easy way to understand our proclivity towards sex, but it doesn't explain why God bothered to involve us at all. If he could create one man and one woman, couldn't he just as easily created a billion men and another billion women? If relationship were his only goal, he could bypass the slow process of multiplication and create a world full of many relationships. If God does this, he gets a lot of people to love quickly. But he has no one on the planet that understands or appreciates that love. I believe that God's instruction to Adam and Eve, and thus to us, to multiply themselves upon the earth was not only his way of populating the planet, for as we have seen, creation would have worked much faster, but it was his way of teaching us instant, inexplicable, unconditional love. When we look at our children, we see a miniature version of ourselves and our spouse. We have recreated ourselves on the earth with limitless possibilities. Through the dynamic of family, we learn what it means to love, and we never even have to go to class or ask any questions. Every day, we're in the school of love, reveling in our revelations and basking in its possibilities. Be careful with whom you fall in love, because by then, it's too late. Once you hear that baby's heartbeat or hold them in the palm of your hand, they may be small, but they've stolen your heart. It's too late to go back. You've fallen and you'll never be the same. God wanted us to experience this so that we would understand the immeasurable, ineffable love that he has for us. He took one look at Adam and it was too late. God was in love. Just as Paul would write that the weakness of God is greater than the strength of man, we can now understand that God's weakness is easy to define. It is his love for us. No matter what foolishness Adam subjected himself to, no matter how many layers of religion he protected himself with, no matter how separated he made himself to be, no matter how violent and hateful he believed that God was, it was too late. God could no more abandon or hate or fight against Adam than we can against our children. When Adam leaves the garden, God leaves the garden. As the children of Adam shape their image of God into their own image, God works, sometimes in the light, sometimes in the shadows, until finally he bursts onto the scene, takes on human form, and expresses the love he has always had for his children. Maybe through his death and his resurrection, they will finally see their own worth. Maybe through the eyes of their children, they will finally understand the heart of their father. Maybe through pain and betrayal and heartache, they will finally understand that even when they were weak and sinful and rebellious, he was with them, standing somewhere in the shadows, waiting. Waiting not with a hammer or a sword, but with open arms and nail-scarred hands, with shoes and a robe and a ring and a fatted calf, waiting. Because that's what we do for our weakness. We wait because our love demands it. Be careful with whom you fall in love, because by then it's too late. We love him because he first loved us. For many of us, it's too late to deny it. We're already smitten. There's no going back. There's only moving forward, receiving and recycling that love. It may take us a lifetime to understand it, and we may have a lot of pain along the way. When we get it, we will love the people around us, even the ones who don't deserve it and who can never earn it. But we will understand that because we will see them as the Father sees them, his kids who are on the run, miniature versions of himself, the embodiment of his weakness. Multiply, he told Adam and Eve, because I want you to know what it means to love your own, so you'll never mistake my love for you. Grace to you.